I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode number 31 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation and the Internet of Things become even more innovative. In this episode, my guest is Jim Stern, the founder of the eMetrics Summit and co-founder and president of the Digital Analytics Association. Jim brings over 20 years of sales and marketing experience to measuring the value of a website as a medium for creating and strengthening customer relationships. He's often referred to by many as the godfather of digital analytics. He's written at least 10 books on internet advertising, marketing, customer service, email marketing, and web analytics, and I'm sure I probably haven't covered everything there. This is a really exciting episode with quite a bit of irreverence as well. Jim has a great sense of humour. We talked about the relevance of data, focusing on business goals, and not getting bogged down in things that don't matter. For today's prize, Jim is providing a copy of his latest book, Devil's Data Dictionary, a less than serious look at analytics. So stay tuned. Later on in the interview, how you can enter the draw to win that prize. As always, this podcast is sponsored by InnovaBiz, where we partner with innovative business owners to transform your online presence into a business generation platform that delivers exceptional results. If you want to learn more, then go to innovabiz.com.au or contact me directly through the contact information there. Now, let's get into the innovation hive and get the buzz from Jim Stern.
This is the InnovaBuzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to have here with me today on the episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from Santa Barbara in California, the US of A, the founder of the eMetrics Summit and co-founder and president of the Digital Analytics Association, Jim Stern. Welcome, Jim. It's a privilege to have you on the InnovaBuzz podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be asked.
We didn't actually meet, but I heard you speak at the Loves Data Google Analytics conference back in October, I think it was, or September it might have even been. And I thought it would be cool to have you on the podcast, so here we are.
Well, thank you. Yes, I remember distinctly that it was September because it was the year that I missed my birthday. I got on an airplane on September 6th, and I arrived on September 8th and missed my birthday in between.
Oh, that's no good. I hope you caught up on the celebration then.
Well, I guess I'll have to start in Australia next year and then have two birthdays.
Yeah, that's right. That's how you do it. Okay, now, Jim, just for those people that don't know, Jim brings over 20 years of sales and marketing experience to measuring the value of a website as a medium for creating and strengthening customer relationships, which is a lot of what we're about here at InnovaBiz as well. So it's really great to learn from his insights today. He's referred to by many as the godfather of digital analytics, and I think we'll hear a little bit about that today. He's written at least 10 books on internet advertising, marketing, customer service, email marketing, web analytics, and a whole lot more. In fact, just a quick competition announcement. Jim's very kindly offered his latest book, The Devil's Data Dictionary, as the prize for today's competition. So stay tuned later on in the podcast and find out how to enter the draw for that prize. Now, Jim, before we start talking about data and websites and internet marketing and all kinds of geeky stuff like that, let's find out a little bit more about you as a person and your journey to where you are today. What did you want to do when you were a kid and grew up, assuming you've grown up?
No, that's not going to happen. Mostly what I wanted to do as a kid is figure out what I wanted to be. I had serious trouble with that in college because there was this amazing catalog of classes I could take, everything from urban architecture to sociology to mathematics to art appreciation, and I just couldn't decide. So I had to drop out for about a year and a half to discover why a college education is a really good idea, regardless of your degree. And so, you know, what do I want to be? I knew I didn't want to live off by myself and grow organic pumpkins.
Yeah.
I knew that I did not want to be stuck in a large glass building with an infinite number of meetings all the time. I did take an aptitude test in high school where they asked a whole bunch of questions. And when the counselor looked through my answers, she said, "Well, Jim, whatever you do, don't be a farmer." Not as much direction as I had as a kid.
Yeah. Well, that kind of still left a lot of possibilities, right? So how did you end up then in data and, well, marketing, I guess, first, and then data and analytics?
So I answered a want ad in the newspaper that said no experience necessary, and I qualified. Was selling Apple IIe's out of a retail store in Santa Barbara. And I learned what a computer was and how it worked, and then I learned about business computers, and I spent about 5 years selling business computers to companies that had never had one before, and then went to work for a software company that made software development tools, or, you know, programs that help programmers write programs. And this is me with an English literature degree in Shakespeare. So my job was to understand what the engineers were talking about well enough so I could explain it to other engineers that they might buy one. So sales, that led to marketing. And then in 1993, I tripped over the internet and said, "Oh, wait a minute. Interesting. That'll change things." And I ran around trying to find somebody who could explain online marketing strategy, and came up empty. There was a webmaster at IBM and a webmaster at Sun Microsystems and a webmaster at Hewlett Packard, and they asked me what I thought their strategy should be, and I said, "I don't know." And they said, "Well, what did the other guy say?" So, well, suddenly I realized what it meant to be a consultant, to ask lots of impertinent questions and then rat everybody else out to each other and write books.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that you were obviously involved in the very early days there of the internet and digital marketing, and I can well imagine. I remember when I first came across the internet, and I thought, "Wow, you could do a lot with this." But pretty much found the same experience as you, that there weren't many people out there that really knew what to do. So it was kind of a completely uncharted territory, wasn't it?
Huge wait and see, and it was pretty frustrating because I had a very clear idea of what it could be, but it was so painful to make all of that stuff happen. And sure enough, even today, surfing the web or trying to find information on your phone is aggravating. We've got a long way to go.
Yeah. So in terms of the Digital Marketing Association, then what can you give us a brief snapshot of what you do there and what the Digital Marketing Association does?
Well, it's the Digital Analytics Association. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we are a bunch of people who discovered that websites had log files, and the log file made a record of every click that people made. And we thought, you know, that might be useful for something. Well, that was a dozen years ago, and since then, we have discovered ourselves being responsible for not measuring not just how many people come to the website and how many pages did they look at, but did email drive that traffic? Did search drive that traffic? Did display drive that traffic? How do we measure social media and the impact that it has on marketing and sales? Can we connect up that information with customer service center phone call information? And how do we correlate that with advertising on television? And so the good old days of marketing research or market research was people doing surveys. Let's call 1,000 people, assume that represents the entire population. That's market research. Then the world got a little more sophisticated and did something called marketing mix modeling, which said, I've got this much money, and if I divide it up into buckets of billboards and radio and television and print, how much do we sell? And if I move those numbers around, if I take a little bit out of radio and put it into print, or I take a little bit out of TV and move it over into billboards, how can I impact the effect, the overall effect of generating interest, changing hearts and minds, and getting people to buy something from me? Well, when web analytics came along, it was a completely different animal, because instead of looking at it from the top down, this was actual behavior. It wasn't asking people their opinion. It was watching what they actually did, and from there, trying to figure out what their intent was, trying to figure out what they were up to. And so now we live in a world where the top down and the bottom up are coming together in this strange area called big data. And you stir it all with a stick and you hope that something interesting comes out the other end.
Yeah, that's a fascinating explanation, and probably one of the simplest ones I've heard for a long time. I know a lot of people look at their analytics data and they're fascinated by the amount of information that you can get on a website, and then they often ask the next question, oh, what does a 50% bounce rate mean, or how come there's more sessions than I have unique visitors, and so on. And that's where, you know, the insights that come from the marketing background kind of have to come into it as well, don't they? And sort of the having the mix of both things is really important.
Exactly. And it's really tough when you go to the effort of putting, say, Google Analytics tags on your website, and then you wait for a month or two for the data to be collected, and then you go and look at the dashboard, and it's very confusing at best.
Yeah.
Because the first thing is, well, here are the three things Google Analytics says I need to know. Clearly, Google is smart enough to know these are the most important things for me. Couldn't be further from the truth. Those are just the generic dashboard covering everybody on the planet, and is guaranteed not to be the most important things for you and your business. For that, we've got to start with, well, what are you trying to accomplish? How do you measure success?
Yeah.
How do you know the work you did today was worthwhile? And that's a question that touches on business model. It touches on investment strategy. It touches on the psychology of what you are trying to accomplish. It depends. It's different for industry. It's even different by each campaign that you run. So how do you measure success ends up being a political question that has to be answered before you can start looking at those reports.
Yeah, and you said something in the presentation in Melbourne that I thought was lovely. It was something along the lines of data without goals is pure narcissism.
Or yeah.
Like that. Which...
It is like, seeing how many friends you have on Facebook or how many likes you can get. That's fun.
Yeah.
It's even entertaining, but it is not useful.
Yeah. So I think, coming back to the question of how do you measure success, or, what is it you're trying to accomplish, which, like you say, is, can vary from campaign to campaign. So if you have an advertising campaign, there's a particular result that you're looking to achieve. And so matching the data up to that is really important. But going even more fundamentally to that, in terms of how do you measure success, that's a real challenging question for a lot of businesses.
And it's and it changes over time too. You know, it's funny. This has been the perennial question. Back in the day when I was an internet marketing strategy consultant, which means I did not actually have a job, I was asked, okay, Jim, how do we make our website better? And the response was, well, better at what?
Yeah.
What are you trying to accomplish? And then that's a three-day-long conversation. Hmm. Now, fast forward to the turn of the century when I narrowed my focus from just customer experience down to how do we analyze it? How do we muck about with the numbers? The question was, well, Jim, what should we measure? And the answer is, well, that depends. What are you trying to accomplish? And there's a three-day-long conversation about that. So is there a single number that identifies whether you're doing a good job? No. If you're desperate for there to be a single number, then the best you can do is Net Promoter Score, which is, would you recommend us to other people? And, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, you've got your detractors who say never, and your advocates who say always, and then some distribution in between. And if you just want one number, that's probably the best one to go with, but it is wildly inefficient or insufficient to help you make any business decisions. So yeah. Between that and trying to measure absolutely everything is some happy medium in between. And there lies the challenge.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things you said in the presentation was around taking some data related to a particular goal that you've had and then forming a hypothesis. So not just looking at the data and saying, well, you know, that's X percent or whatever the number may be, but forming a hypothesis around what could that mean and then testing that hypothesis with another measure and further data.
Exactly. So if I have 500,000 people visiting my website, is that good? Well, maybe. How about if we compare it against last month and then we'll tell if it's getting better or worse. So here's a hypothesis. 500,000 visitors is better than last month. Last month I spent $1,000 trying to promote my website. My hypothesis is that if I double my spend, I'll double my traffic. Let's test it. And that's how analytics works. It's, well, I think maybe this is what's going on. And if that's the case, then I can improve my outcome by doing this other thing. And if I believe that, then I will invest in a test. So rather than double my spend and suddenly I'm out $2,000, I'm going to do a little test over in the corner to see if doubling the spend actually does double the traffic, or maybe it only increases the traffic by 10%, in which case it's a horrible investment, or maybe it triples my traffic. And then, oh, that leads to a bunch of other questions. And that's why they, you know, if you're looking to hire an analyst, you're looking for the person who, above all, the most important trait is curiosity. They have another question and another question and another question. And if you come across somebody like that, hire them right away.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And like you say, that's where the value of analytics is. So it's not when you look at Google Analytics, for example, which gives you, I don't even know how many pieces of data, but, you know, it's like I don't think I've ever looked at everything. But, you know, it's...
Never that long.
Yeah. Can you pinpoint a couple of pieces of data or maybe even just one piece of data to either validate or test the hypothesis that you've come up with and then guide you in an action plan that hopefully, you know, you will get three times the number of visitors through a small investment.
And that's the process. Hmm. You know, step one is, can I trust my data? So Here's the best example of how data is not trustworthy. There is a wonderful thing called the Analysis Exchange that was created as a community benefit for free by the people at Analytics Demystified. In it, in Analysis Exchange, a nonprofit organization gets together with a advanced leading senior analyst and a newbie, a junior analyst who, you know, you can't get any experience if you don't have any experience. So the new person is the mentee and the senior person is the mentor, and the nonprofit association says, well, here's my data. What can we do with it? And this is all free for everybody. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that always happens is, well, we've looked at your data and it's really, I'm afraid the tags on your website are incomplete or incorrect or corrupted, and the data that you've got is not very useful. So the first project we're going to do is re-tag your website so that we can be confident that we've got good data. So that's always step one. And it happens in every kind of organization all over the world, because there is, there is page tag rot. Over time, people will put new pages on the website and forget to tag them, or they'll tag them in not quite the same way that all the other pages have been tagged. It always happens that an advertising campaign, you know, the ad people come in and say, "Hey, how well did our ad do?" Well, which ad? The one we just ran. Hmm. The one you didn't tell me about, so I didn't tag it, so we don't have any data. Yeah. That one. So, step one, let's get some good data going. Then, the next step is, well, let's review it and see if anything stands out. Is there anything obviously odd? Do we have some pages that are overwhelmingly popular and some that are never visited? What kind of hypothesis can we create about those? Well, on the one hand, it might be that people just don't care about the subject matter for those pages. Or it might be, as my own website experienced one day, I forgot to put a link to those pages on any other page, so nobody looked at them. Big surprise. But I had to look at the documentation to find that out.
Yeah.
So step one is, you know, are there any anomalies? Anything goes bump in the night? And then the next step is to avoid averages. What's the average number of people who visit my website in a day? What's the average number of pages that they look at? What's the average number of all of those things are actually useless, because it's just telling you that you had more or less than yesterday, but it doesn't give you any insight. So the most important thing to do next is segmentation. And by that I mean, can you figure out how to divide up the people who visit your website into groups that represent different behavior? Now, it might be these people came from display and these people came from search. It might be these people come in the morning and these people come in the afternoon. It might be these people are more interested in this subject than that subject. It almost doesn't matter, as long as you can identify different groups, because as soon as you've got groups who exhibit different behavior, you can treat them differently. You can give them different content. You can respond to them in different ways. And even if it's only gender, or even if it's only by the location of their IP address, anything you do to treat different groups of people differently will increase the results you're looking for. So that's, you know, that's sort of the step one, step two, step three. Clean data, look for what's weird, and then start segmenting appropriately.
Hmm. Yeah, well, that's been a very clear outline of how you should go about looking at your analytics and planning how to get value out of it. So that's great. Thanks for that. So in terms of your own work, I know you do a lot of presentations. What do you spend most of your time on doing on a day-to-day basis?
Well, my number one job is to find people to come and speak at my own conference, the eMetrics Summit.
Yeah.
That's been running since 2002, and we do it in 7 or 8 cities around the world. The audience from the eMetrics Summit created the Digital Analytics Association.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes up a fair amount of my time too. So the conference is my for-profit side, and the Digital Analytics Association is the nonprofit volunteerism side, and they both pull on me fairly equally.
That's an interesting model. So the conference drove the demand for the Digital Analytics Association. And that's a non-profit thing, but it's a membership community, right?
Right. So the audience from the eMetrics Summit said, hey, this is a great conference, but we really need more. Mm. And so the DAA, Digital Analytics Association, is focused on professional development. So training, education, certification, helping people find resources so they can learn more, a job board, that sort of thing, and community, which means building local chapters, having people come together on the website for open forum discussion, interviews, activities, casual get-togethers and meetups. Because the thing we learned very early on, and this is true of any nascent industry that's just starting out, the people who do the work have a horrible time trying to explain what they do to everybody else in the organization. Very complicated. When they get together and they realize they're in a room of like-minded people who understand what they're talking about and share the same problems, and some of them have solutions to those problems, everybody gets very excited.
That's right, yeah.
You know, I'm trying to accomplish this particular thing with this particular web analytics tool or this particular customer relationship management product, and I'm struggling, and does anybody have any clues? And somebody in the corner says, oh yeah, I solved that problem last week. Come over here and I'll show you what I did. Hmm. And that kind of camaraderie has been the definition or has been the culture of the industry since the beginning, when we're all struggling to make it work and struggling to explain ourselves to our colleagues. Well, now that we're in, you know, we're all together at a conference or we're on the website having a conversation, we can use the shorthand and we know that everybody knows what we're talking about. And it really helps move the whole industry forward because everybody is so interested in helping each other move the industry forward. We've gotten to the point now where one of our most popular subjects to talk about is storytelling and PowerPoint presentations. Because as a group, you know, generalization, yes, but as a group, we're so interested in the data and we're so interested in the nuance and the minutiae that when we find something interesting, explaining it to, say, an advertising manager or a product manager or a sales team turns out to be very difficult because, well, the analogy I like to make is we're doctors, and the patient comes in and says, you know, I'm not feeling well, what's going on? And the doctor does a bunch of tests. Let me take some blood. Let me listen to your heart. And instead of coming back and saying, well, here's your cholesterol level and your blood pressure and your electrolytes level, and is wait. The patient says, I don't understand what all that means. Do I need surgery or can I just take this pill?
Yeah.
You know, just tell me how to live my life instead of try to imbue me with 15 years of medical school. And as an analytics person, I am so fascinated by how the data gets collected, how correlations you would never have thought of putting together suddenly reveal something interesting. Mm. That when I go to tell a product manager what I've discovered about customer behavior, I fall down the rabbit hole of explaining how I arrived at my conclusion instead of just giving them the conclusion. You know, it's that my automobile is making this horrible noise. Well, I looked at your car yesterday, and so first I took off the manifold, and then I cleaned out the... No. Can you fix the noise, and will it cost me a lot of money? That's all I need to know.
Yeah.
So we are training ourselves to be part of the business, not just, you know, in our little geekdom, in our, oh, isn't this interesting technology, and aren't we having fun? It's also, oh, we can grow to become a respected advisor to the rest of the organization because we have a unique lens through which to view our customers and the marketplace.
Hmm. Yeah, well, there's a lot of fascinating stuff in what you're saying there. I mean, first of all, the sense of community within an organization and sort of, you know, the common interest of driving an industry forward and seeing everyone succeed and providing value rather than kind of, you know, the dog eat dog that you might see in other places. So I know, you know, some of the communities I'm involved with, I see that contrast in some places, and the ones that have that sense of, you know, we want the industry to have a good reputation, we want to elevate everybody's standards and make everybody successful, and we'll help one another to do that. They're you know, really great communities. And I had an experience the other day where we were trying to do some complicated code on a website, and I didn't know how to do that, and asked in this one community, and somebody said, oh yeah, I know how to do that, and basically we'll show you how to do that. And there it was. So somebody solved the problem.
Yeah, and it's kind of surprising, and then suddenly you find yourself on the other side of that.
Yeah, that's right.
Where somebody comes up and says, I'm so frustrated, I just can't figure this out. Oh, I know how to do that. I can help you. Mm. And it's exciting to be able to help somebody.
It is.
And
yeah.
Then you realize, oh, that's why. And for example, the analysis exchange, senior analysts are willing to help young ones who have no experience because it's so fulfilling.
Mm. Yeah, it certainly is. And I know, you know, I'm in this community. I've contributed quite a bit there, and so people were very willing to help me when I sort of put out this question. But the other thing that's fascinating is the idea of presenting the information and the knowledge that you have in a way that actually resonates and is meaningful to your clients or to your audience, which, you know, that I find that very fascinating on so many different levels, not just on the analytics level, because like you say, you know, you can apply it to medicine or your car mechanic, because I guess we're all so engrossed and focused on actually making something happen and on the nitty-gritty of what that involves that we sometimes forget that when we're talking to our client, they're not interested in that part of it. They just want to know, what does it mean for us?
And in fact, it has a negative effect when you try to get them interested, because they don't.
That's what we're paying you for, right?
That's true. Mm. So don't have the education. They don't have the background. Mm. It's not that they are stupid. It's that they are simply ignorant. They haven't had the years of training, so that's not their fault. It's just the fact that they were focused on their job and not yours. So when you go to them and start using your own jargon, you make them feel stupid, and nobody likes to be made to feel stupid. Mm. And nobody likes to have their time wasted. So if you know you find a fascinating, if you work through the night and you find a fascinating nugget of insight, you want to share how you found it, and they don't care. Mm. and you end up having conversations you should not have about, well, how trustworthy is the data, and why does this number not match that number? And it's completely beside the point. So we drill into our younger analysts to keep their eyes on the four business reasons the four goals that any organization has, and if you can relate whatever your nugget of insight is to those four, then the people will listen. And they are: increase revenue, decrease cost, increase customer satisfaction, and increase capabilities. So if you come up with this amazing insight through your own blood, sweat, and tears, and you can show somebody how it will make more, spend less, make customers happy, or make us more efficient, oh, now they care. They'll listen. Mm. And if one of those people says, well, I'm curious about the data, ooh, then let's go have lunch, and I'll tell you all about it, and, yeah, and I'll have a convert.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great advice. So focus on what is really important, and make sure you know what the implications of the data are on those things. All right, so in terms of all the activities then that you're doing, is there something that worries you and keeps you awake at night?
Worries me. Yeah, I think I would have to say that I am worried that people are desperate for things to be black and white, and the world is made up of nuance. Hmm. I just want, just give me the number. Just tell me what the number is, and I'll decide if it's useful. Yeah, that's good in accounting, you know?
Yeah.
Bean counts, bean counters and accountants, and did we sell and how much did we spend? That's accounting. The stuff that digital analysts deal with is actually probability, likelihood, statistics. Did we have 500,000 people visiting our website? Well, yeah, more or less. Well, what do you mean more or less? Can't you tell me exactly? No. Well, why not? Ooh, wrong conversation. Because now we're in a world of technology that is fuzzy. And while I cannot tell you exactly how many people visited, I can tell you that it was 7.32% higher than yesterday. Really? Roughly. Usefully. But I want to know exactly. Sorry, can't tell you. We don't live in that world. We live in a world where the technology gives us just enough data to be directional. We're getting more visitors. We're getting fewer negative comments on social media. But I want to know how many exactly. Doesn't matter. And even if I could give it to you, it wouldn't make much of a difference. So what keeps me awake is the general population, non-analysts, still think that we are counting people and clicks, and in fact we're the math is a little bit fuzzier than that. Is it still useful? Oh, it's wildly useful. But having that conversation about are they exact numbers or not is a waste of everybody's time.
Yeah, that's great advice, and I will probably use that little short group of sentences there quite often. I remember having a conversation yesterday, and it was around bounce rate, and I can't remember the exact number, but let's say it was 45%, and the question was, well, is that good or bad? What should I be aiming for? And I said, well, I don't know. So it basically is the same conversation, isn't it?
It is, and it ends up people focusing on the wrong thing. So if somebody says, all I care about is conversion, I want you to increase conversion on my website, I can do it, I can guarantee it by putting an end to all advertising at once. And then only people who already know who you are will come to your website. Only people who already expect to buy from you will come to your website. Your conversion rate will skyrocket down, and your company will go out of business. Hmm. If bounce rate is the only thing that matters to you, then we can make sure that we put systems in place to keep away anybody who might bounce. Or we could change the definition of bounce rate. That would help change the number. We could, you know, if the person says, all I care about is revenue, just make more sales. Easy. Sell $1 bills for 50 cents. And your sales will go through the ceiling. Everybody will come to your website and buy. You will have zero bounce rate. Everybody will buy a dollar for 50 cents. This is not a business model.
Yeah. Yeah, so it comes back to those four business reasons that you mentioned earlier. So maybe you've answered this question. What do you see as the biggest challenges in the digital world then? Let's talk about the e-marketing, the e-metrics summit, and how you promote that. What do you see as the biggest challenges around that business?
The biggest digital analytics problem that I have is that my numbers are statistically insignificant. So I get several hundred people coming to my website each day. Mm-hmm. And I start to try to shift my advertising and promotion budget around based on that small a number, I'm going to make some huge mistakes, because it's just not enough to be significant. In general, things change. I like to refer to the tides. If I go to the beach and I see, the water comes up to here, and then I run away and I make plans for building something in the sand, and I come back and, oh my goodness, the water is all the way up to here. How did that happen? So now I go back and I change my plans. Then I come back to the beach and the water's way down there. I need enough information. I have to have watched the ocean for several months in order to understand that there are tides and that they change. But they are trustworthy, but I have to have enough data. Now, if you're running a test of what's the right picture to put on your homepage to sell more stuff, and you are Amazon, then you probably get enough traffic in about 12 seconds to do a valid test. For me, a valid test would take several months, and over several months, too many other things have changed. So the closer you get to the conference, the more tickets are sold. That's normal, and I can kind of account for that. So I don't actually tear all of my hair out and stay awake at night anymore. But that's for me personally. You know, that's the problem of being a small business, is you just don't have enough data. Now, can I see where my traffic is coming from, and can I decide I'm going to spend more money on LinkedIn than I am on Facebook? Yeah. That works for me, but that's over a large period of time. Now, you had asked, what do I see as the biggest challenge in the industry? And that's a whole different animal, because I am not the target audience. I am not a good example. Large companies who have enough data and enough vision to hire analysts or consultants, the biggest challenge for them is data integration. I have site data and email data and search data and, you know, every new way to communicate that comes along, there's a new tool that will measure the activity. But it measures it in its own unique way. It captures the data in a unique way. It stores it in a unique way. It cleans it in a unique way. It reports on it in a unique way. So we have all of these individual tools that are measuring activity across these different channels. How I measure my mobile app is different than I measure my mobile-facing website, is different than I measure my desktop-facing website, is different from et cetera, et cetera. So now I've got to collect the data out of all of these silos and bring it together into, so, you know, depends on how old you are. You might call it the enterprise data warehouse. You might call it the Hadoop cluster, or it might just be somewhere in the cloud. Well, that's great. It's all together in one place, but it doesn't talk to each other. And that's the complexity. It's the massaging the data so that it is correlatable. Examples include, I want to take the data from all of these different collectors and look at it week after week after week. And, oh, well, when does the week start? Well, in that tool, it starts on Monday, but in that tool, it starts on Sunday. Oh, okay, well, let's adjust for that. They all start on Monday. Okay, so here's the amount of traffic that comes to my website in the morning. Well, are you adjusting that for IP address so that it's in the morning from the time zone you're looking at? Or is that the morning for you? Or is that Greenwich Mean Time? And this is just the really light, easy stuff. Yeah. From then on, it gets really complex. And this is the biggest challenge. When somebody says big data, they are talking about the ability to take all of this and put it together and find a way to identify this person looked at the desktop, looked down there at your website through an iPad at breakfast table. They came into the store to their office and looked at it in the desktop. At lunch, they were on their phone. Then they called you. Then they went to your retail store. Now, it is possible. If you do everything just right, it's possible to identify that that is a single person and that this is what their behavior looks like. But it's really tough to do. And as we look at other data sources, data that can be bought from third parties, data that comes from advertising networks, data that is pre-processed by research companies, and I do want to bring it all together. That is our current big challenge, because the promise is huge. The promise is terrific that someday I'm going to go to a website and it will know what I want and it'll give it to me. And I won't have to click on a thing and I will be the happiest customer on the planet. And we're a long way away from that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, this has been really fascinating, Jim, and there's a lot of great insights there that we'll dissect and pull out and add to the show notes, obviously. What I'd like to do now is move on to our innovation round, and that's a series of five questions that hopefully you'll give us some really short, insightful answers that will help inspire the audience to do something awesome.
So I will keep it short. I'm not so sure about the insightful. We'll see.
So what do you think? A lot of the things we talk about are innovation. And what do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative from your viewpoint?
Bring together diverse points of view. Don't have a meeting of people made up entirely of people like you. Find people who have different experience and different points of view, different ages. To really mix it up.
That's excellent advice. I love that. Yep. What's the biggest thing, or what? Sorry, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products in terms of, say, the eMetrics conference?
Take some serious time off, which people in the United States are terrible at. I think the Japanese are worse, and that's it. Everybody else actually will take several weeks off of working and let their minds relax, and big ideas can form out of that. But Americans spend so much time just, you know, getting that next thing done and the next email answered that we don't spend enough time taking a breath.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I find that even doing that on a daily basis, taking time out to go and do something else, whether it be exercise or photography in my case, that letting your mind relax, you come up with all sorts of ideas.
Yeah.
All right. So do you have a favorite tool or system for improving productivity and allowing you to be more innovative?
Caffeine.
That's great. Yeah. And it's supposed to be good for you, the latest research shows, too.
Well, when you reach my age, you discover that everything is either the best thing for you or will kill you, depending on how long you wait. It'll come back again.
Yeah. All right. So what's the best thing to keep a project on track?
Having a minder with serious small deadlines. This has to be done by the day after tomorrow, and this has to be done by the end of the week, and this has to be done by the end of the month, instead of trying to chew on too much at once, break it up into small bits.
Yeah, that's great advice. Milestones and breaking it up into small bits. The piano teacher that my kids went to for a long time, she used to say when they were faced with learning this big piano concerto that went for 20 or 30 minutes, and when they first started, she said, it's not that bad. Just, treat it like pizza, one piece at a time.
Excellent advice.
Yeah. All right. And what do you think is the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Wow. if there was a number one thing you could do to differentiate yourself, then we'd all be the same.
That's great. Yeah.
Punting.
Yeah. Okay. That's, I haven't had an answer like that before. I guess a lot of people say different things there. So hopefully we can learn from all the different things that people tell us.
If you want to press me for a real answer, I think the best thing you can do is work as hard as possible to get into the mind of your customer.
Hmm.
Because you are not the target audience, your customer is.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I'm reading Captivology by Ben Parr at the moment, and one of the things he talks about there is the framing trigger, which very much is about capturing your audience or your customer's attention by understanding their frame of view and what's in their mind. All right, well, thanks for getting us through the innovation round. So what's the future for you and the future for digital analytics?
Well, there's two parts to that. The future is bringing more people into the industry and getting them up and running as quickly as possible, because this is one of those areas where there's a huge need for people who are good at it. When times are good, we can afford to invest in people, process, and technology to improve capability, and that's terrific. When times are bad, then we desperately need somebody who can tell us if we're spending our money wisely. So this industry always needs more humans to do the work. There's lots of jobs going begging. So on the short term, it's let's get more people involved, more people up and running. And the longer term is some fun new technologies that are coming down the pike that will help us do our jobs better, help us master this big data thing. We'll do predictive analytics, and then it starts getting into areas where there's not really good definitions for what those things are. Right now, I'm taking a good hard look at machine learning, where instead of telling the computer what to do, you tell the computer what solution you're looking for and point it at a data set, and you let it figure out how to get there.
Hmm.
It's fascinating.
Hmm. Yeah, that does sound fascinating, because there's a lot of research going back 20 or 30 years into machine learning, and I'm not quite sure that we've actually... we have made a lot of progress, but I'm not quite sure we're seeing the end result of that at any stage soon. So
we're seeing some really interesting things come up that are working. So, for instance, Siri in your iPhone.
Mm.
Or I have an assistant called Amy, and if you and I want to set an appointment to get together for lunch someday, I send you an email that says, how does next week look for you? And I copy Amy in the email, and you and Amy have a conversation, because Amy is an AI that is looking at my calendar and conversing with you through email, And it is artificial intelligence solving an extremely narrow problem that turns out to be very complex. So is AMI going to become sentient and become Skynet? No. But we're starting to see tools like Facebook's M and Microsoft's Cortana that are pretty smart and pretty fascinating.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting one. So I'll have to look out for AMI.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Jim...
Fair, you should... Let me make it easy for you. .ai is where you can find AMI.
Okay, all right. We'll go look for her. So let's get back to our competition. So again, as I said earlier today, the prize is a copy of Jim's latest book, Devil's Data Dictionary, and Jim is very kindly donating that, so I really appreciate that. Now, this book takes a, what shall we say, a slightly different look at data and analytics, and it's testament to Jim's irreverent sense of humour, if you like. We've probably seen a little bit of that come through today. So if you thought data and analysis was a dry topic, then perhaps Devil's Data Dictionary might just change your mind on that one. So, Jim, what do we want our audience to do to go in the draw for that prize?
Well, that's a great question. I'm not sure what kind of competitions you usually hold. Shall we make them run up to the highest hill and see who can record the most elevation? Shall we make them donate the most to their favorite charity? Shall we make them email me? And my email address is jsterne, J-S-T-E-R-N-E, at targeting, targeting, and tell me why you think it's important that we make fun of big data. And the best answer, I will send you a book.
That's great. I like that. So why is it important to make fun of big data? And if you email Jim, and also if you leave a comment underneath the blog post, then we can all share in your comments, and hopefully some of those will be insightful and humorous as well. And I'll touch base with Jim again in a few weeks' time and get him to award that prize.
Absolutely. I'd be thrilled. Just in time for Christmas.
Exactly, yeah. So this has been really fascinating. Jim, finally, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field, in innovation and in productivity?
Try stuff.
Try stuff.
Throw the spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. Yeah. Be willing to take a risk.
Love it. Yeah, great. So you've given us your email address. Is that the best place for people to reach out and say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
It's the best. It's very findable. I've had the same email address for 25 years, and yes, I get a lot of spam.
Okay, we'll post links to that, and also to the Digital Analytics Association website, and to the I see that Devil's Data Dictionary does have a website of its own, so we'll post a link to that as well, and underneath the show notes, so that people can just click on the links. So finally, I always ask my guests who they'd like to see me interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why.
There is a gentleman at IBM. I'm failing on drilling, getting down and finding his name. So it's not going to be him. If I can't remember his name, that's not going to work. Shoot. I've got one. There is a futurist named Thornton May. Thornton with an N, two N's, one in the middle, one at the end, and last name May, M-Y. And he is a very big picture, very far future, and a seriously intelligent guy when it comes to innovation.
Sounds fascinating. So, Thornton May, look out for an email in your inbox, or we'll see if we can connect via LinkedIn and get you on the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Jim Stern. So, Jim, thanks very much for sharing your time and your insights with us today on the Innova Buzz podcast. It's been really fascinating. I've enjoyed this and learnt a lot as well. So I'll follow up with you in a couple of weeks' time on the prize, and let's keep in touch, and we'll send everybody to look at the Digital Analytics Association and the eMetrics websites, as well as the Devil's Data Dictionary.
Well, thank you so much, Jürgen. It has been an honor, as I said at the beginning, and a whole lot of fun. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Well, that was certainly another fascinating interview and loads of fun too. I hope you enjoyed Jim's contributions as well as his quirky sense of humour as much as I did. And I hope you take away some useful information. All the show notes for this episode will be at innovabiz.com.au/Jim Stern. That is J-I-M-S-T-E-R-N-E. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.com.au/Jim Stern with an E on the end, for all of the links and everything we spoke about in this episode. Now, Jim suggested I interview futurist Thornton May on a future podcast. So, Thornton, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from me for the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Jim Stern. Thank you to my audience for listening to the Innova Buzz podcast. We love you to review this podcast because reviews help us get found, and your feedback helps us improve. You can review us over at iTunes or on Stitcher, and while you're there, please subscribe so you'll never miss a future episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and keep innovating.